CliffCentral.com.
Good morning. It's a Monday. We got a whole 5 days this week. Can you believe how cruel that is?
Oh,
vicious, mean thing for the calendar to conspire against us and do.
Oh gosh, it's going to feel like that first workout you have when you haven't been exercising for 6 months.
Yeah, I always know. Like, people realize the seriousness of something when the roads are busy in the morning. Like, you can tell people understand that they've got to actually do 5 days of work this week. And you could tell that they're pissed off about it, too, because I saw the person in front of me throw out, in the course of about a 20-minute drive that this person was in front of me, they threw out about 10 cigarettes.
Oh.
Sucks.
Which means they smoked those fucking cigarettes. They were smoking, that whoever it was, a guy or a girl or a child or whatever it
or
was.
Or a chimney.
Yeah, whatever you were, ma'am, sir. You have a problem.
Chain smoking.
We got a problem.
I was probably smoking like four at a time. My goodness.
Well, I mean, it became an obsession of mine because I was watching. And the first time I saw the cigarette hit the tar and kind of, you know how it splinters off into a bunch of sparks.
Yeah.
And then I saw the second one and I thought, wow, that's a lot of cigarettes in a short space of time. And I thought, I've got to watch this person. I almost took the wrong turn off. I was so obsessed with watching them. Then I phoned Ben and said, look, I'm going to be like a minute late. I have to see what happens here.
Got to see it through.
And I said to him, please, just start the recording. I'll be there in a second.
Got to understand what's going on here.
I mean, that guy, I reckon it's a guy. I got to say, I think it's a guy. Because women wouldn't just throw, I mean, not a lot of women would just throw cigarettes out of the window, first of all.
No, they would.
Why are you not on there, Ben? Hang on a second. Let me turn you on. Hang on.
This is a priority thing.
No, let me do that. Try now?
Yeah, no.
No, still not.
Something's still happening.
Okay, so you say something.
There we go.
There's
Ben. Hey, Ben, morning.
But you know where it's going to go from here, okay? So 20 cigarettes in the way to work equals 10 cups of coffee, like, at the office.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, mm-hmm. I mean, where do you go from there?
This guy's going to have a horrible day. And I got bad news for him. It's going to be a horrible week because Friday is a whole 5 days away. So just... You know what, dude? You need to go to your psychologist / psychiatrist, and you need to sit down on the couch for a little while, and you need to tell this person your problems. And I think it should be a psychiatrist, because I think they can prescribe something and it'll make you a bit happier. Like, these days, there's no excuse for someone to be miserable all the time. You don't have to.
No, unless they choose to, because some people like that.
Well, first, that's true. We'll get to that in a second. But first of all, if your life is terrible, you've got to realize that you are living at the best possible time, and you would have been much more traumatized and much more unhappy if you were born in your parents' or your grandparents' or great-grandparents' generation. Way, way more unhappy, no matter who you are, right?
Sure.
There wasn't a person who had it better off in 1700 than you've got it right now. Nobody.
Unless you were a king.
Even then, see, you didn't have running water, you had to shit in a bucket as a king.
But you had tons of money.
The king's best day is shitting in the bucket.
And if you get a flesh wound, you could die.
Yeah.
And if you drink
unpasteurized milk, you could die. And if you went out riding and you landed badly after a fall, you could die. And it's just death was everywhere.
Mm.
So that's the first thing. You're better off than any human in your family tree that came before you. Second of all, there are drugs that have been expertly manufactured in a pharmaceutical laboratory that are designed to set off chemicals in your head that can instantly improve your mood. Look, they may dull you, they may numb you, they may turn you into a zombie. It's still better than being miserable by choice. And then, like Ben says, maybe you're just doing it because you want attention.
I never got that, hey?
Misery loves company.
Right on. See, that comes from someone who understands.
But speaking of living like decent lives and having it pretty easy, I watched a documentary of the weekend because I'm now obsessed with Netflix documentaries. All about Saudi Arabia.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, I knew it was crap, but I had no idea it was like this.
Oh, hang on. Didn't you send me a message about
this? Wow, it is such an incredible documentary. So basically, they get these journalists to take hidden cameras into Saudi Arabia, right?
Yes.
Which is obviously you'd get killed if you're found out.
Uh-huh.
So there's a small sort of rising tide of activism happening in Saudi Arabia. But it's just crazy what life is there. Like, if you're a woman, men just walk up to women in, like, supermarkets, just smash them in the face and kick them over. Like, they show the CCTV footage. Woman's just, like, going through the dairy section. Then
a guy just hits her
just
for no reason.
Her on the ground. And
he's not
her
husband or a guy who's got a reason to have beef for.
Just for shits and giggles, just going to go smack her. And there's, like, religious police that go around the whole time. Yeah, so you could be in Cinnabon, right? Because they have Cinnabons there.
Wow, okay.
And they get pulled out of there and get told to go pray. This guy was playing guitar by the beach, just chilling out with his friend. They come up to him, smash his guitar, smash his hand, beat him up. And then all these beheadings. So they have these squares. And these squares have drainage ducts where the blood obviously goes when they chop people's heads off.
Wait, like an actual, like a town square?
Yeah, they have all these different squares, like chop shop square and stuff. And then once the people have been headed, they then crucify the bodies for all to see on main roads.
Wow.
And
this
like,
is in a modern country?
This is in Riyadh and all other places.
And this is what you would have seen in like medieval Europe.
Yeah.
Or when Shaka was king. Impale people.
It's crazy.
When the king had to use a bucket.
Yeah, when the king had those people I was talking about
yes.
just now. Even the king had to shit in a bucket.
And like the state's oil, petrol, all kinds of stuff is apparently worth something like £70 billion because of all the oil. But yet like 30% of the country live in complete and utter poverty where they can't.
Of course.
They don't even have a bucket to shit in.
Yeah, that's a universal thing all over the world.
But I had no idea.
Mabs is right there too. I mean, let there be one person, because everybody has the best intentions. I just want to deal with this thing about like the country living in poverty. Everybody has these great ideas about how if everybody had equal resources and equal claim on the money, that we would treat each other well. Mm. Well, here you got a country where they could give each person like $1 million like that.
Yeah.
They don't. And guess what? They never. Humans are not capable of that kind of altruism. And especially humans in that part of the world. Jesus, that's
like
barbarian.
Proper slums and squalor, but like this, they've basically prostituted Islam to make it sound like so the royal family can hold control. Yeah, so it's that Wahhabi.
Well, what happened was that after the British decided to hand Saudi Arabia back to the Saudis, what was it? Effectively one family, the Al Saud family.
Yeah.
The Al Saud family did this devil's deal with the Wahhabi Islamists in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it was like a council that there were certain imams who'd got together and decided they would be the ones who guarded. They were hard right leaning Meccan imams. And they said, well, okay, we'll do a deal. Because we know every great dictator, everyone who's good in the dictatorship business knows that the best ally you can have is religion. Because it means that people are fearful of you even when you're not in the room. You know, that's the power of it. And they did this deal with these imams. And the deal was, we will make Wahhabi Islam, this hard right version of Islam. And believe me, it's the source of 90% of the problems within Islam is from that Saudi alt-right sect of this craziness. They're the ones who have these religious police and who export terrorism.
Imagine.
And teach it in the madrasas, all that kind of thing. These are the guys, and they made this deal just so that the Al Saud royal family, which is by now, I mean, they're just hundreds and hundreds of members of this family who call themselves princes and princesses. Because you imagine if your great-grandfather had been made king, and all of his children, all of their children, and all of their children were now alive, there'd be a good 100 or so of you. And they're close to thousands of these princes and princesses.
And everyone is still clinging on to some sort of title or position.
And the money. And ordinary Saudis who were living just like the king, back, you know, because the king of the Saudi Arabia, it's not like he came from some illustrious bloodline. He was basically just another guy on a camel in the middle of the sand, like not even 100 years ago.
Well, it's like the Monaco royal family.
Yeah.
They just stormed in and took shit.
Right. And then stole out Charlene and kept her prisoner
in a high turret.
Anyway.
But I mean, that's people for you, hey? Yeah. And at the end of the day, it all has to do with greed.
The thing is, like, it just goes a little bit further. So there's a few activists that are actually trying to survive there. There's one woman, she was outrageously put images of her driving a car on the internet.
Oh, boy.
She drove towards the Saudi border to see what would happen, put in jail for 73 days without charge, without trial, and then eventually she was just let out.
And you can imagine what happens in a Saudi jail.
And then there was hidden cameras that go into Saudi jails, it's just like mimicking what normal life is. So there's executions in there, there's torture things. And there was that blogger, of course, got sentenced to 10,000 lashes and 10 years in prison.
My God.
Basically saying that if you can't
be free.
Didn't
they just execute that guy for blasphemy? They just put a guy to death. By the way, and this is where I get annoyed with people like Prime Minister Justin Trudeau of Canada, who says that that blasphemy is a real thing. Well, when you acknowledge that, when you give religious nutcases the room to actually take people, ordinary people who've used words, just made sounds with their mouths, and you reserve for yourself the right to punish and kill or torture those people for saying the wrong words, this is what you end up with. It's only a small skip and a jump to executing someone over blasphemy. I mean, it's a victimless crime, right?
Well, essentially, they sentenced a 17-year-old boy they tried to call it blasphemy, but he didn't really say anything. Anyway, he was committed to death, so he's in prison right now.
No. The one that I'm talking about is the guy that actually killed him over the weekend.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're constantly killing people, but in this documentary, they showcase the 17-year-old boy. So the whole thing is, like, Britain, they turn a blind eye to this because they sell, like, £7 billion worth of, like, military supplies to these people. So whenever this guy wants to go to England, you know, he has tea with Lizzie. He meets the Prime Minister.
Oh, he's treated like a king.
Treated like an absolute king.
He's a king, yeah.
And then it's like, well, him and his family are just creating this. And then, you know, the whole thing with ISIS. And they pay lip service to the fact, like, oh, yeah, we're doing bombings. We're going to fight terrorism, blah, blah, blah. But where are these guys getting money from? They're not getting money from scratch cards when they go to like a first world country. They're getting pipe money from these guys.
And what it really points out too is just how hypocritical all these other kings and queens and Western rulers are, because they entertain this goddamn family, this disgusting, this clutch of
cut from the same cloth a lot of the times.
Well, exactly. You know, what is being a king or a queen if it's not forcing by violence your authority over other people? Exactly. Anyway, what is it called? Because Ian wants to know what the documentary's called. Can you look it up?
Just type in Netflix.
Netflix Saudi Arabia, and you'll find it. Yeah.
And then I watched one about women joining ISIS and how people get baited in social media.
What a serious weekend. Watch a rom com.
I did. No, I did so much this weekend, guys. I did so much.
Go on.
Daniela was away. My cat and I were, like, you know, reconciling after the incident.
I
played golf. I saw friends.
So no more attacks.
No, quite the opposite. She's even more loving and soft.
Oh, it's that guilt thing.
She's a bitch.
Yeah. She is.
Look, it's
it's basically an abuser because she she's like those guys that they're real shitheads, and then they come up to their wife or the girlfriend afterwards and they're like, oh, but I love you.
Yes.
See, and Ben has fallen for it. So it's like battered spouse syndrome.
Guys, I still believe it could not actually be her because
excuses for the abuser.
There was a poltergeist in your room that night.
It's just that there were too many wounds and too many places in my body in a short space of time for it to be just one small cat.
So you would rather believe that it was a poltergeist than the cat.
This is like those women who go, but he loves me after they've been abused.
Freddy Krueger, Wolverine, Patrick from SpongeBob with scissor hands. These are all three suspects, though, just as likely.
All right.
Okay, Ben.
You keep convincing yourself. He's got Stockholm syndrome. That's the problem. We can't help him out here.
He'll wake up too late.
All right, so what was the other one? ISIS.
So then this woman goes undercover, right, to try and, like, bait herself into ISIS. So she goes onto Twitter, she starts sprouting off all this garbage about Allah and giving yourself to the way of God and all this crap and how Westerners should all die. And people start retweeting stuff. Then she follows who retweets her. Uh-huh. Then she starts finding people spreading this hate speech. And she narrows down to these three people who look to be, like, recruiting women for ISIS.
Yeah.
And she gets into these prayer circles and she starts seeing them in and around London. And then eventually they bust her. They go, no, you're a spy, because they want to search her bag. They want to search what she's wearing under her burqa.
Oh, yeah.
So she goes full, like, top to bottom ninja. And then she literally does infiltrate who these people are. But this is what I don't understand, right? She's got all this hidden footage of these people literally publicly demonstrating, saying, down with democracy, yep, Sharia law for Britain. Like, why aren't those people deported? You know,
oh, you mean this is openly in Western society?
Yeah, in London.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They're,
yeah,
openly demonstrating outside of, not even outside of mosques, outside of like McDonald's. And they've got these signs saying, down with democracy, down with Cameron, okay, fuck Britain and
let
stuff.
Let me ask you something. If that's how you really feel, like, let's say you're in South Africa now. I mean, we've all agreed that we believe in democracy here. And, you know, everybody in the country has to abide by the Constitution, including this president of ours who doesn't seem to think he does.
Well, he can't spell but Constitution.
We all agree that that's the way we're going to go, right?
Sure.
I mean, that's what we agreed to in 1994. And I know that not everybody was at the negotiating table, because I hear a whole lot of people screaming and shouting that, oh, well, you know, economic freedom in our lifetimes and all of that stuff. But this was what we agreed we would do as civil society.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you don't believe in democracy and you'd prefer Islamic theocracy or whatever, then go to a country that has that.
Exactly, and have had it for generations.
Come here where we've decided, the majority of us anyway, in South Africa, we've decided we like democracy. We don't want a state religion. Mm. Don't come here with your crap. Go to a place where they have that already. Because I can promise you it's not as nice as it is here.
Yeah.
It just seems so bizarre how local authorities will tolerate that. So, I mean, they're saying we want Sharia law. Okay, go to the Saudi Arabia and go to the other places.
Go and see how nice that is.
But the thing is, they won't, because the healthcare is not so great there. The transport system's not so great there. You know, employment isn't so easy there. It's just like, It really grinds my nuts that these people are humored and indulge around this, because it's not about, you know, in the wake of that last attack, right, at Parliament in London, it's not, you can't generalize and say Islam is evil, this kind of stuff. It's just a bunch of dickheads here and there, isolated. And they all think this huge crusade they're on is so noble and so fantastic. And with people with nothing else to do in life, they recruit them.
Made me think of something that we brought up on the show once before. When people are ideological purists,
mm-hmm,
this just leads to trouble. If you have an ideology that you think is infallible, you're just on a road to hell. The best thing you could ever do is go, this is I think I believe in this, but if someone can give me a good argument, why not? I'll be willing to listen.
Sure.
That's the smartest position you can ever occupy. You may think you're the most stupid or intelligent person in any room, but if you go in with that attitude, it's the best attitude to have. Just always assume you might be wrong, and you'll never fuck up. I can promise you that. Now, I've been in arguments with people I thought I was so right, often, and they will come up with something so smart, so logical, so sensible, it'll just chop me down at the knees. And it humbles you every time that happens. You realize, maybe I shouldn't be so sure that I'm right.
And you're better off as a result.
Yeah.
Well, if you are close-minded and closed-eared as well, it's just like a recipe for disaster. Because you're basically saying, I know everything. I'm on top of everything. I'm the hottest shit around. And
ideological purists. Mm. Like, I've got all the answers. My philosophy, my ideology, whatever it is, it could be a political one, it could be a religious one, it could be a philosophical one, it could be a comedic one. The minute you go, this is absolutely always going to be right, you're in trouble, because you know someone somewhere has got a better argument against it if you're smart.
I just find it so baffling how human beings, we're so capable of love, great things, achievement, happiness. And all they've chosen is just hate. Because that's all it is. It's just hate. Spreading hate, and more control.
Yeah. Who was I talking to about this over the weekend? I went out for dinner before Sexpo Saturday night with some people I know. And we were sitting having this conversation. I would be so... I'd just be despondent and depressed and disappointed in myself every night if all that I had was malice for other people.
Yeah.
And yet some people get off on that. They I don't know, maybe they don't have anything else, and in the absence of having nothing, they would rather fill it with negativity and nastiness. But it does strike me as so weird that there are people right now who are just full of anger. I saw a dude in the gym the other day, and obviously a gym is not necessarily the best place to judge humanity. This guy, he had tattoos all over him. Not that that's ever a sign of anything. He had a big chain on. Not that that's a sign of anything.
Was it a gold chain?
Silver.
Oh, I'm still already judging you.
Yeah. I'm giving you a picture of what he looked like. Yeah. And he was throwing these weights around and swearing the whole time.
Yeah.
Just an angry, angry person.
A string vest?
Yeah.
Yeah, done.
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you conform to a stereotype because you actually are as douchey as that stereotype.
And stereotypes are born from a particular reason.
But here's the thing. I didn't hate him. I went past him and I thought, as I walked past, I thought, you have a horrible outlook on the world. You're looking for a fight. You're waiting for someone to give you an excuse to behave even worse. That's what he's doing.
Sure.
He's waiting for something terrible to happen. What a way to live. Can you imagine the anxiety? That guy's going to have a heart attack sometime in the next 3 years, and it won't be from the steroids.
It just comes back to me, like, people don't understand the potential for greatness in their lives. And that's not me reading like a fortune cookie or something. It's like, there's actually so many cool things to be excited about.
Absolutely.
All the time.
Absolutely.
Even here.
Even on a Monday.
Even on a Monday, Monday with, I mean, a 5-day work week.
If you just even drive in traffic, it would seem to me that the number of miserable people far outweigh the number of those who are not. Because look at how easily and quickly people snap at each other.
Sure.
Over the dumbest things.
It is easy to be miserable, just like it's easy to be unhealthy, just like it's easy to be angry. Mm. But I mean, you got to make better choices.
Step up. All right, there we go. Nice way to end that half hour for the Monday.
Sure, okay, then.
We got a lot to get through, and I feel like we just got started. Let us check in on some news with Mabali Moloi at 6:30. It's brought to you by Colcacchio Pizzeria. Anybody have any over the weekend?
I did, Friday. Because you know I've got that app.
This is why you're the maestro.
Well, you know I've done quite well in this app, right? So I went and redeemed slices.
Yeah, what do you got? I mean, like, you've got some kind of Jedi level.
I'm on the maestro level. Yeah. So what? Because of purchases, I have slices. So you go into the app and you go, that looks nice. And it says there, it'll be X amount of slices.
Yeah.
Type it in, show the person at the counter. And I say, hi, I would like this. And here's my code. And they go, cool. Type in the code.
Right.
10 minutes later, great hot pizza on the way home. Happy days.
Beautiful.
No money out of pocket.
I love it. I'm very jealous. Colcacchio Pizzeria, they can make, they even do stuff like vegan pizzas, which are, like, the whole thing is constructed out of non-animal product. It's just magnificent that anyone could even go into a kitchen and construct such a thing.
It's a work of science, really.
It's incredible. Let's get into the news, and maybe later on today you could treat yourself to a Colcacchio pizza. Babs, what do you got for us this morning?
All right. We will begin with the matter of the Eskom boss and his stepdaughter. Nepotism is not a new, it's not a new thing here, people. In fact, it exists, pretty much everywhere in the world, even in family run businesses.
I am sorry.
That's just how things are. So the stepdaughter of Eskom boss Matela Koko has reportedly scored contracts worth R1 billion. This is for her company from the peristatal.
How did this idiot think he could get away with this? I mean, he says it's completely coincidental.
He said that he didn't know that the stepdaughter was a director of this company until about 4 weeks ago. And then he said that he advised her to resign with immediate effect.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
So all of this was revealed by a Sunday Times report that the 26-year-old Koketso Choma, who graduated just 3 years ago, was appointed as a director at Impulse International last year. The firm has since awarded 8 lucrative contracts from a division of Eskom that the boss headed up until he became acting CEO at the power utility.
What a family. They must be the most stupid people in the universe, because he has clearly had no interest in her life up to now.
Well, he says that she
didn't ask her once what she does.
He says that she is the product of a previous relationship, but that she does live with them.
Even worse. So what, you get home in the afternoons, you never ask her, how was your day? It's your stepdaughter.
Some family members just don't talk to each other, Gareth. But he said that he wasn't aware that his daughter was the director of this company. So, yes, a bit of nepotism. All right. And then
a billion rand, guys.
A billion rand
worth of contracts.
Stopped?
I mean, a billion rand. You seriously, you just misplaced a billion rand in the wrong company because your stepdaughter just happens to have been there and you had no idea.
Oh, man.
You know, there's white-collar crime. And then there's just absolute blind arrogance.
No, like collar too tight, which means no blood rushing to your brain, which means you don't think properly sort of crimes.
Wow.
This is what it is.
Wow.
Okay. And then with the DA's federal executive now set to decide on a report into Western Cape Premier Helen Ziller's colonialism tweets, pressure is mounting for the party to take a decisive decision. Apparently, according to some sources, DA leader Musi Maimane wants Helen to quit as the premier. But of course, the former Cape Town mayor will not go down without a fight. So over the weekend, the DA's Federal Legal Committee met with Helen Ziller. This was part of the probe into the matter. They then compiled a report, which has been handed over to the executive. And now it's just a matter of waiting to see when exactly the executive will publicly comment on that report. But according to sources, Musi wants Helen out. I suppose it's a case of her, you know, being a bad look for the party at this stage. In fact, according to Stellenbosch University's Colette Schultz-Herzenberg, she said that it's clear what the party has to do now. She's quoted as saying, Helen Ziller has done the party some damage, and now it's up to the leadership of the party to distance itself from that type of rhetoric.
Oi.
Mm-hmm.
Oi, oi, oi.
Okay, and then the president over the weekend, appointed an interim SABC board, Gareth. The SABC has been without a board for quite some time now.
Who of his family or friends has he put on the new board?
There are a couple of business people in there. There's some veteran journalists. How many people were appointed? I think it's six in total. Mm-hmm. The board has been appointed for a period of 6 months, and then I don't know what's going to happen after the six-month period. But yes, the presidency revealed yesterday that the president has now put an interim board at the helm of the public broadcaster.
I don't know why. They seem to be functioning fine without a board for the last couple of weeks. Haven't they? I mean, you know, the only fuck-ups have happened before there was a gap where there wasn't a board. In other words, the minute you appoint political people to run the SABC, it seems to be a disaster, just like all the other parastatals that are such disasters. They seem to run better without political interference, which flies in the face of all those people who say that these things should be, you know, made public companies rather than privatized. Just seems to me to be a very bad argument if you're looking for an example of how well it can work, especially here.
And then a coalition airstrike on an ISIS truck, which was laden with explosives, led to the deaths of dozens of civilians in Mosul. This is according to a senior Iraqi military officer. The US-led coalition has acknowledged that they did hit a truck containing explosive. The incident dates back to the 17th of March. Confusion has surrounded events during airstrikes on the city over the last couple of weeks after allegations emerged that as many as 200 civilians have been killed in Syria. And then earlier yesterday, the Iraqi military said that 61 bodies had to be pulled from the rubble at the site of where this incident took place. Oh dear, civilians getting caught up in all sorts of things.
Come to the Middle East. Beautiful. Fantastic place. You know, this Allah dude must really love his own followers to give them the shittiest, most violent part of the world where nothing grows. It's just misery. It seems like misery from when you wake up in the morning until if you're lucky enough to get to sleep at night. Jesus.
You see, that's why my... understanding or relationship with God is very different. And I love, because it's similar to what Wanda Sykes believes. But she says something along the lines of, of course God is sitting up there somewhere and not surprised at what happens. He was like, of course you guys can't love each other. Of course you guys won't just get along. He put us all in there just waiting for all this mess to happen.
In other words,
what? He's looking at away at you, popcorn in hand, laughing. And
yeah,
because
it's like he says, love one another. And wouldn't it be easy to just love people who look the same as you, who do the same things?
Yeah,
if
he knew we couldn't just love one another, then what he's doing is the essence of sadomasochism.
Which is?
He's saying, I command you to be well, but I make you sick.
No, it's more like the way I personally look at it, it's more like a let's see. It's a test type of thing.
Well, if that's the case, then he's just a very cruel and capricious, nasty son of a bitch. Then he's just mean. I mean, that's like the kid who burns the ants with the magnifying glass and then laughs and it puts more ants in the ant farm so you can burn them. It's just vicious and cruel. So that is a very bad outcome for God.
No.
Objectively, he's just an awful creature then. Or he's a sadomasochist, in which case he's commanded us to be well but makes us sick, which seems to be just as cruel in some way. Or there's the third option. And by the way, these are the only three options. These people who say, well, he really does care about us.
Yeah.
Very little evidence, by the way, to show that there's any interest in individual human beings.
You're still alive. You have another
day. Yep. But see, many people are alive, but in the most horrific circumstances.
But we aren't.
No, sure. But that doesn't mean God's chosen you, because how full of yourself do you have to be to expect that to have happened? The third and only possible further option is, he doesn't really care. If he's there, he kind of made us and we're here, but he's not personally invested in any of it. He's probably building some other universe, for all you know.
On Mars.
Where just like, okay, you know? Sorry, failed with this crop.
Yeah.
Moving on
Maybe he's kind of dusted
human generation 2.0.
Like, maybe he's kind of dusted his hands and said, oh no, I failed miserably with these humans. Let's try again somewhere.
Let's build something better. Yeah. All right. Enough of the, we didn't mean to have a discussion about what we think God's intention is, but there we go. All right. Let's get into some sport this morning, shall we? Here he is, Ben Karpinski with some sport. What do we got?
Well, Proteus boating attacker by his penetrating a 60-year-old man on a bottle of whiskey. New Zealand 271 for one. Just one wicket after 88.2 overs. SA managed to get 314 thanks for Quinton de Kock. He got 90. But yeah, it's easy runs here. New Zealand in the third day of this third test. Of course, they are one down in the series. So they need to get a bit of a trot on run rate-wise to really put some pressure on the Proteas, because it is New Zealand. So some say it will absolutely piss down with rain and they'll lose time. So 272 for one currently. They trail by 42 runs with a mammoth 9 wickets in hand. The game is pretty tight between Australia and India in that test. That kicks off. It's actually on the go right now.
Okay.
Australia scored 300. Warner got some runs. Smith got 100. The rest of them did bugger all. And India, well, they're 275 for 6 in response there. Their tails looking to have a bit of a wag with Saha and Jadeja. In Formula 1, Gareth, yes, Formula 1. Mercedes did not win.
What?
Yeah.
How's that possible?
Can you believe it? Well, Hamilton started on pole.
Was someone asleep at the wheel?
No, they did all right. Hamilton started on pole. He had a good start. Then he wasn't getting much traction from his tires, he felt. Uh-huh. So he went into the pits. He got new tires. And then he came back. And that Verstappen kid.
Yes.
Who I always get the impression he's listening to Bieber songs in his headphones. And he's playing like Xbox on the side while pissing older guys off. That's how he drives. He basically, he was just blocking Hamilton all the way. While this was happening, Sebastian Vettel, who has won this thing a few times back in the glory days of Red Bull racing, he was in the lead going, shit, I can maybe win this. My Ferrari's not so bad. We've already proven this decently in the winter trials. So he held on. And even when he went in the pits to change his tires later on, he came out and Hamilton could not get ahead. So Hamilton finished second. Bottas finished third. But Sebastian Vettel in a Ferrari won the Australian Grand Prix. Hmm. And with that, everyone's going, hooray! We knew the season would be better. A bit premature, but still.
That one thing turned everybody They're absolutely so desperate for it to be interesting again.
Completely. Just okay. The greatest thing ever, ever, ever. So, Bafana played over the weekend against Guinea-Bissau in a friendly. They won 3-1. There was other international friendlies and World Cup qualifiers, and they all feel the same to me. So let's just skip right on to the rugby then. Crusaders versus the Force. That was the first game of Super Rugby over this last weekend, and the Crusaders absolutely hammered the Aussies 45-17. The Crusaders just seem to be the best team in the world when it comes to the last 20 minutes. So even though the Force, they threw everything they could at them, these guys just pull away. They pull away like Usain Bolt when they need to, and they're currently the best team in the tournament. They're unbeaten, they're looking bloody solid. Rebels Waratahs, I went with the Rebels at the beginning of the weekend. I really felt that the Waratahs, they're all over the place right now, and the Rebels could do something special. Well, they were 25-7 up at halftime. Pricks then lost 32-25. Did not score a single point in the second half. And with that, my Super Brew was going from perfect to blotch.
Uh-oh.
There it is. So Waratahs get their first win. Sorry, maybe their second win. I don't know. Nobody really cares about these Aussie teams too much. 32-25. They won that. Then the Blues. They hosted the Bulls, who were always going to get a hammering on this tour. And the first one was confirmed. 38-14. That is, yeah, that's not good. Brumbies, they then took on the Highlanders, and the Highlanders managed to hold on for a win. 18-13, after a month of playing New Zealand teams, the Highlanders finally got some breathing space, although it was still a tight match, and they came back late on there to win that one, 18-13. And then the Sunwolves versus the Stormers. Stormers resting some key players, mostly Ibn Etzebeth and Peter Tevzatoy, and the Sunwolves stuck it to them early. In Singapore, but the Stormers came back, scored some brilliant tries in 44-31. So the Stormers pretty much are, well, they're always going to win their conference because they've got the Sunwolves, they've got the Bulls, they've got the Kings, they've got the Cheetahs, I think. It's not a very strong conference and they're way ahead already. Speaking of the Kings, they lost 19-42 to the Lions. You know, all the time the Kings have been in the Super Rugby, they've never beaten the SA side. Really? Only once they've got a bonus point for losing by less than 7, and that was the weekend before last. So 42-19, the Lions win that one. The Cheetahs versus the Sharks. This is always going to be quite a tight game. And youngster Kerwin Bosch, he just shined with the boot. He shined with everything, basically. And he gives decent interviews.
What?
He's not completely stupid and
that
like
never happens.
Mindless. Yeah, he talks and he's got a presence about him, composure, and the guy's only 19.
I would just love a sports person who realized that 90% of their job isn't necessarily kicking the ball or hitting the ball or bowling the ball or any of that stuff. Like this dude, you're there, you're actually just the entertainment.
Hmm.
Like sport just fits into the category of entertainment. It's not a separate category.
It is entertainment.
And if you're on the field, your entertainment value is about how well you perform. But off the field, you should be ironic and funny and interesting and apply your brain. If you really want to be one of those sports people who makes the millions, yep, that's where you got to be.
That's exactly what it is. And I know these guys are coached and managers say very little, or they just haven't got anything interesting to say, which is also fine. But, I mean, this guy seems to be the full package. But he's 19 years old.
Well, I haven't got to him yet. That's the problem.
He's 19 years old.
Wait till
you watch him play.
Wait till those PR people come and knock on his door. Hello. Hi. We're here to completely sterilize you, yeah, and make you the most boring creature in the world so you can keep on earning money from corporates.
Yeah. So Kerwin Bosch, he's 19. He's currently the Sharks fly half. And, well, Pat Lambie, like I said last week, he's like an Alfa Romeo. You know, it's good in theory, but it will break down and disappoint you.
You said
terrible resale.
Yeah. It's made of glass, right?
Yeah, it's just not. And, you know, people just keep going on about Pat Lambie because he's good looking and he's like, whatever. I just think this guy is. When you look at a guy like Kerwin Bosch play, and he's 19 and he's got so much going for him and he's so good at kicking actual points over. It's another thing that flyoffs need to do in rugby. I know Nas has been saying it forever and ever, but he just seems to be the full package. But he's 19, so what I reckon must happen, he must still play for the junior box because he's only 19. And to thrust him into the box lineup right now would be so difficult because, firstly, Alistair Goodseal will coach anything good out of him completely. He'll be given a shit scrum off like Rudy Page.
Oh.
And he'll have a pack of forwards that might not know whether they're coming or going sometimes. And then he'll basically be useless. And then he'll be picked up for a French team where he'll shine again, but at which stage he'll be kind of overplaying for SA.
What a forecast.
That sounds so negative, I know. But this guy, he's got to be developed, nurtured, managed, all those kind of things because there's talent. And again, he's an example of all the talent that's in this country. We should be beating everybody. But unfortunately, our administrators and coaches are completely stupid and inept. More on that later, actually, in the Bounce Show. 10 o'clock here on cliffcentral.com. And the final Super Rugby result from the weekend was the Jaguars. They beat the Reds 22-8. The Jaguars, they are so strong at home because it's a bit of a ball ache to go play them. But they're racking up the points slowly but surely at home. If they can just do a little bit on the road, they can be amazing. And then finally, talking about being amazing, Dustin Johnson won again. Another WGC title. He won the match play. He beat John Rahm, one up, one of the best finals in quite some time. Rahm took him all the way to the end. And the Spaniard, watch out for him. John Rahm, I guess in the next 5 years, he'll win, I think, at least 3-4 majors. This guy's going to be the business. Mm. He's a no-nonsense badass, kills the ball off the tee. And it's exactly why I keep saying golf isn't a great place right now.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right, Ben. Let's get into the money shot with Anthea. On a Monday morning. Oh, so high for the honey. See what's high for the money. This is actually, someone recorded this. It was a cover band playing at some club here in South Africa. They recorded this and sent it to me. And said, Anthea's got to hear this.
Brilliant. How cool is that?
So this is an actual live version recorded here. I wish I knew who the band was. I'd give them credit. But the dude who sent me the clip didn't say who they were. I don't think he even knew. Isn't that cool?
That is super cool.
Oh, so there we go. Anthea's song as performed live about a weekend or two ago. All right, Anthea. So how are we this Monday morning?
Yeah, we're okay. We're all very good. I had a nice relaxing weekend. Busy, relaxing.
Yeah, how was the birthday?
Really good. Lots of fancy dinners and friends. Ooh. And yeah. And then yesterday I just spent most of the day in my tracksuit pants.
That's the way.
Reading.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
All right.
Global markets, though, a little bit cautious. I think everyone's worried or was worried about this Trump healthcare vote that happened on Friday.
Yeah, he didn't win.
No.
He didn't get his way. For the first time, spoiled little rich kid Donald Trump is not going to get his way.
But this and the thing with that is that was one of his key campaign promises, right? Uh-huh. That was it. That's what he was going to deliver. And now he hasn't. So tables are turning on him, I'm afraid.
And welcome to politics, Donald. It's not as easy as business.
The real world. And so, of course, our market was down just under 0.5% on Friday. Really just nervousness, global nervousness. Nothing really on our side. Lots of company news, though. So Capitec announced on Friday that they're acquiring a 40% interest in an international online lender. They're paying 21 million euros for it. It's called Cream Finance, and it provides consumer loan products online. Everything's automated in Eastern Europe. So Poland, Latvia, Georgia, Czech Republic, and then for some bizarre reason, Mexico and Denmark. I don't see the realization.
Strange combo, yeah.
Very, yeah. So it's not very material for Capitec's earnings or from a valuation perspective. But I think from a strategic decision, it's fairly good. So I guess Capitec are going to get one or two seats on the board. And it just gives them a way to learn about new international markets and online banking is what I think. Hmm. So I always think this online banking scenario, like kind of, I remember when it started so many years ago, 15 years ago, like Egg and 2020 or whatever those businesses were called. And they never really seemed to take off. And only recently, it seems to have done really well. So it's as if the world needs time to digest the new economy, you know, and what's going on and how to take hold of it.
Right. Well, you know, there are also these things that they do need a long runway.
And a tipping point, right?
Correct.
There's another company which I've spotted in the US.
I love people who already start dishing out their judgment within a space of a year or two of something launching, and they think they know the answer of how it's going to end up. I want to know where those people are when those companies do end up being successful, because they carry on writing their economy forecasts and all the rest of it. You know, all those people who said that the 2008 crash wouldn't happen in America because of the subprime lending crisis. Why are they not held accountable and fired by the publications they write for?
I don't know.
Because they do. You know,
that's your department.
But they do carry on writing as if they never made a misstep.
Yeah, like, the market forgets very quickly.
In any other business, you'd be fired for being so completely wrong. And these are the guys who say, online banking. I know those people. I know who they were
yep.
back in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, and they said, ah, this online banking, people will never trust it. They're the same people who said, oh, people will never buy stuff online with their credit cards. Yes. They'll be too afraid. Now that's...
And now look at it. While we're talking about this, I have to tell you about a company I found in the US. It's listed on the NASDAQ. It listed last year in June or July. It's called Impinj, I-M-P-I-N-J.
Okay.
They do radio frequency identification, and they've been going for a while now. But suddenly, it's as if the market has accelerated. So what they do is little tags that they attach to assets, so you can track your assets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they belong to retail companies like Zara uses them, or airlines to reduce lost baggage, automotive to identify cars, and for cashless fueling. Like really interesting kind of – it's just a little – little sticky thing you put on your asset, basically.
Right.
Or tag, that's the word I'm looking for. They've suddenly accelerated their market. They shipped 13 billion tags since they started, and 50% of that was sold in the last 2 years.
Wow.
So you know how it is. Like, things take a while to take off, and when they reach that tipping point, off they go. From a business point of view, Impinj has grown revenue from $51 million in 2013 to $77 million in 2015, and they recently reported their third quarter results and made $78 million. So they've already exceeded the previous year's target. Amazon are now looking to use them as well. It started trading at about $20 a share last year, currently around $28. Consensus forecast or projections for the share is at $40. So there's a nice 30-odd% upside in the share price. So if you're looking to buy stocks in the US, there's a little something I think that might be worth looking at. Nice. A company called Impinj.
Very nice.
They call themselves the Internet of Things, and they say they've got a great quote, which is kind of the end point is the starting point in digital transformation in retail. So in other words, kind of, you know, tagging clothing, reducing losses, reducing kind of asset tracking issues, all starts at the end of the chain, kind of in the retail space.
Okay.
Okay, shall we go back to our market then? Yep. Very excited about company.
That is interesting. Again, and you know, people who are looking for trend, take a look at the ones that are succeeding.
Indeed. And then Brait announced on Friday that they are delaying their listing in London.
No surprise there, because it's so... They're
unsure about Brexit, that's why.
No, the share price is just disgusting. That's the problem. Nobody's talking about that. Almost half the value I bought it at.
Exactly, yes. So they've said that they're convinced of long-term benefits of listing or getting a premium listing in London, but they're not sure about Brexit. That's kind of why they're delaying their listing. They have already started the process of moving their registered company from Malta to the UK, so it's not like it's off the cards completely. And then on similar news, are kind of in the same vein, in the weekend, this weekend's FT, the Swiss finance minister, said that he thinks Brexit could work in the UK's favor. And he thought that Switzerland could find an ally outside of the EU, but he said that they could be a competitor in the low tax environment for Switzerland. So I thought that was quite interesting, because he's now looking at it going, oh, Brexit, that could be good for you. Plus, you have to become a bit like Switzerland. Become like us and you'll be fine, I think he was saying. And then he also said he thinks that the EU might have to bow to voter pressure for tighter border control. So I thought it was an interesting kind of view of Brexit and kind of the, you know, the votes for the far right and what's going on. So maybe Brexit could work in everyone's favor.
Okay, let's see. I mean, that's, you know, whether it works in everyone's favor or not, the people of Britain voted. And even if it's by a small majority, the majority rules.
And it's going to happen. And then Advitech reported as well last week. Great set of results. They really just have confirmed that they are defensive, non-cyclical, highly cash generative business. Both schools and tertiary divisions performed particularly well. Revenue was up 24%. And if you break it down, revenue in the schools increased by 15% and in the tertiary division by 28%. So you can see kind of almost immediately how they've taken on this tertiary division and how the demand has grown and kind of where it's going. They're still very ambitious. You know, management said that they want a target of 100 cents per normalized earnings per share by 2018, which implies a 22% per annum growth rate, which for a company that's come off it's coming off quite a fairly high base. To continue on that in that vein is quite something. But I think they do have opportunities, and they currently have 6% of revenue outside of South Africa, so generated in Africa. Mm-hmm. And they now want to increase that by 2020 to 30%. There is opportunity, and you know they've got the backing of IFC, which is the World Bank's finance arm. So I think they absolutely can do it. From a share price point of view, I'm afraid I think the share looks a bit full at the moment. It's slightly higher than the estimates of fair value. So if you don't own, would you buy at this stage? Probably not. You probably want to wait for a little bit of a pullback. It's probably going to perform in line with market for a while before it starts generating or extracting value from some of the newer operations. So, But if you've got it, hold it. It's fine.
All right.
And then Life Healthcare announced that they were doing a rights offer. Not a share we own at the moment. It will come under pressure because the issue price is $24.50 and it's currently trading above that. But the question now is, if the share falls, and is it a good opportunity to buy? I think that's a tough call to make. If you own the share, I think take up your rights, because actually they're offering it at a discount to VWAP, which is larger than the share dilution. And if you want to buy some to take up your rights issue, then tomorrow's the last day to trade. I'm going to stay away from it for a moment. Like I don't really like trading these things. I want to buy for long-term investment. Wait and see.
Okay. What
happens. I want positive news from the company.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Yeah.
Before. I mean, we're picky about our.
We're very, aren't we?
Our medical investments.
Yeah.
You know, going to.
Well, about all our investments,
Netcare,
I'd like to think.
MediClinic and Life. You know, yeah, you got to be a little more investigative about these things. I suppose it doesn't help to just have a surface feeling for which of the healthcare groups you want to invest with.
Exactly.
All right.
And then lastly, Nike reported last week as well. I'm afraid that was a fairly disappointing set of results. Revenue was up 5%. It was up about 7% in constant currency. They really have currency headwinds. They've got a couple of currency hedges that they need to roll off. And then, of course, their emerging market currencies, the ones that haven't performed well, obviously we have, but other emerging market currencies might not have. They haven't done so well. The real issue with Nike is they're guiding to 5% revenue growth, which is like not great, right? And then also to margin contraction, which we never like. And mostly the margin contraction is because of more aggressive promotional activity. And we saw exactly the same thing happen with Under Armour. It was a couple of months ago, and there the share price fell 40%. Like, they had shocking sales and margins were under pressure. So in other words, they were promoting their goods for much cheaper than they had previously. And that's always an issue for a company. I mean, for us consumers, it's great. We're getting a bargain, and just generally retail in the US in the kind of, what do they call it? Athleisure division, you know, this kind of, relaxed sporting
apparel
stuff. Apparel. Yeah. Like me in my tracksuit pants kind of over the weekend nonsense. So that really looks like it's come under a bit of pressure. You know, Sports Authority filed for bankruptcy last year. Under Armour, I've just told you, is bad. And then last week, Sears said that there's a strong possibility that they might not continue as a going concern. So in other words, a company that, like, I would never have thought Sears would go under. You know, it's like the quintessential American retail.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It looks like they're going bankrupt.
Good heavens.
Yeah. So I think Nike, it's in a good space. It's doing like quite a few interesting and innovative things. But I think at this stage, they're kind of, it's a difficult period they're going through. And I think it might get a bit worse before it gets better.
All right.
Yeah. Unfortunately for Nike.
Okay, Anthea.
And then we've got MPC this week, on Thursday, the announcement.
That where they might decide to do nothing.
Please don't say that, because you're tempting them to put rates up. Actually, you know, I think the market is now pricing in a 25% chance that we'd get a rate cut by the end of the year. I think we're going to get a rate cut before the end of the year. And I read an economist's report the other day that said we might get 2 rate cuts. I don't think we'll get 2. It depends. I mean, inflation's still at 6.3%, which is well ahead. And I know that the Reserve Bank targets kind of 18 months out. And I'm not sure we're going to get to the midpoint of their targeting, the midpoint 4.5% inflation in 18 months. You know, inflation's little, it's still a little bit sticky, I think.
All right. But that would be good news for a lot of people.
Wouldn't it be great? Oh, a rate cut would be fantastic.
All right. Thank you, Anthea.
Pleasure.
Very good. Anthea Gardner, The Money Shot. You can listen every single day at about 6:45 to 7:15. And we fill you in on all the stuff that's happening in the market. What's going on with currencies? What's going on with the resources? Basically, everything you need to know. One convenient, easy to eat, snackable daily report. Okay. When we come back in a moment or two, we'll check in some news and take your thoughts and your messages. You can WhatsApp us on 079-748-2090. Let's go. Let's get your day started, right? Monday morning, cliffcentral.com. Alicia Mkize. Love this song. Cliffcentral.com.